Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week from La-Di-Da Cross Stitch Designs, Lori Markovich. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Well, we're doing okay. Thanks for joining us. This will be fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And this week's show sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. And here's a word from Kim.
Sassy Jack Stitchery is happy to be a sponsor of Fiber Talk. We so appreciate all the heart that Gary and team put into their show, and we always look forward to each episode. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for all you do for our needlework world. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant needlework shop located in the mountains of western North Carolina, just north of Asheville. We're in the process of moving our shop to its forever home in a historic Folk Victorian on the National Listing of Historic Places, just 3 miles down the road from our current location. While we're moving, you can find us in all our normal online haunts, our website at sassyjackstitchery.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We can't wait to open our doors and welcome you into our new old home. It was always a plan to be in this beautiful old house, and we've invested a huge chunk of our hearts into its renovation. Every renovated board, every push-button light switch, every old porch swing has lovingly, mostly, been placed there with our own hands. It has a wonderful, warm, welcoming feel about the place already, and your stitchy joy and laughter with friends will really make it home for Sassy Jack's. So look for us online for the next few months, as we'll be filling online and phone orders as per usual, and we'll be looking forward to the spring at the Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina. When the time comes, we'll leave the light on for you, just like your mom did when you were a kid, so you'll know it's time to come home. Now on to the show.
Hey, thanks, Kim. And yeah, be sure and please support our sponsors, and particularly Sassy Jack Stitchery this week. Kim, yeah, that's the go-to place right there. And if you get a chance to go to Weaverville, you definitely want to go visit that. That's a beautiful country, nice little town, great restaurants. So take advantage of that. All right, Lori. The story about you got started designing because there was a cross stitch pattern in a printer you bought for your family business?
Actually, I didn't even buy it. My father passed away, so my mom ended up running a urethane business, which none of us knew anything about. but we didn't really have much choice. And so we decided to be modern and learn how to use a computer. And we were typing invoices up until then. So, okay, went to a class, realized we needed a printer. We didn't really know anything at all. So my mom picked whatever she picked up. It came back and it had a program with it that had, there was quilting and cross stitch and a few other things. I think the idea was to promote computers at home. It really didn't exist that much in 1997. So it was a factory, and I wasn't really impressed with their lunchtime talk. So I stayed in the office and played around with these programs and started designing cross stitch.
That is such a random thing to have loaded in a printer. That's
yes.
Well, it was a disc, and I still actually have it because it was just so bizarre that it would be there.
Yeah.
But my mom had a printer. I mean, I had a printer. I could print. I could do the stuff. So it was maybe a little of my dad's influence in there, like find something else to do and get out of here. But however that went. But I did have an art degree, so I wasn't just coming out of nowhere with it.
Okay, because that was the other question I had for you is do you have an art background? Because to pick up a design program and start creating things, you got to have something to go with that.
For sure. And I'm from Wisconsin. We're pretty cheap. So I'd go to the library and I'd look up patterns and think, oh, I'm not going to pay for that. I'll make my own. and I did. So that was kind of fun.
Well, that's a great way to start. Now, had you been stitching prior to that? Or?
Yes, I have. Since probably the 80s.
Okay.
The 1900s. But, you know, just the little stuff that you get at the store and little projects and stuff, home with kids, so you got to do something.
Yeah, yeah. But not to the level where you were ready to leap into design.
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
No. Nope. And actually, that was quite fun. I spent a lot of time at the library doing research, and it kind of opened up an opportunity for me that I had no idea was even anything. So I'm working with the local shop, and Chris from Norton Crafts was really helpful, encouraging me and coming up with, you know, 10 or 12 different designs to get started, to have a name, to learn how to do a logo and stuff. That was a pretty big deal.
So take us through that then. So you have this software. First, you got to figure out how to use it.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that was not easy back then.
You know, it's the same pattern maker program I still use.
Oh, is it?
It is. It's not that hard.
Okay. So you start doing some designs. Now you play around, you design them and stitched them yourself, and
I sure did. Learned
whether they worked or not.
Yep, I had to. Well, and my big loan was I had to borrow money to buy frames.
Yeah.
So, because you got to photograph them and
sure
have a camera, and I mean, it's a lot of different steps to it that I had to learn every step along the way, and luckily, I was able to do it.
Yeah. Now, did you come up with these early designs and think right away I can sell these, or did you just use them as to give you something to stitch?
Mostly giving me something to stitch.
Yeah.
And then I would take them into our local store looking for linen or threads or something, and they patted me on the back and said, you should talk to this person and you should do this. And I did. So I'm glad I did.
Oh, so then obviously they were good enough out of the gate then that you caught the store owner's eye and they saw something there.
Yep, they did.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do a lot of designs before anything shows, before anything actually gets sold. So did you just sell through the local store then?
I did not, because I didn't even have a clue what this industry was.
No.
So I talked to Chris, and she said, well, if I could come up with 10 things, she would distribute for me. So I came up with 10 things and sent them off to her, and she did. And then the local shop wanted to get some too, but it's really started through Chris.
So this Chris Stott at Norton Crafts then.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, you just made a whole lot of designers jealous because you right out of the gate, you had a distributor and everything.
So did you have to print your own patterns then at that time and put
you
the...
Bet.
Photos on and all those steps.
You bet.
Okay.
Yep. Bring in your roll of film and get it developed and hope you got one decent one on the roll.
Right.
Oh, that's right. That, yeah, there would not have been a digital camera at that time.
There would not have been.
Oh.
Yes. And so I remember I did one and I loved the photo, but it had a little white dot on it. So I had to buy a marker and touch that dot on like 200 of them.
Oh, geez.
Cut them out and paste them on. I mean, we've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. Cause I mean, we just take, whip out your phone and take a picture for granted now.
For sure.
And delete them. And you can, it's easy. You just go through, you don't like it, you delete them. I was just listening to someone talk about how Kodak was this monolith, with film, and then now everybody's digital. No one, hardly anyone uses film anymore.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Cool.
I left art school before the computer craze, and so a lot of us left with really no skill, nothing that related to what was currently going on in the art world. So it was interesting to have to reboot and take kind of a leap there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was curious about that too, because I mean, I've been a magazine editor for a long time, and I remember those days when just a PC even to edit copy was such a big deal, and then I remember artists who had never even looked at a computer trying to learn how to lay out magazines and do art with computers, and same like you, simply had no background whatsoever. And taking classes in those great big thick 4-inch thick books that we used to buy, and just trying to learn. So Yeah, it's a double commitment. You're trying to create art, and then you're trying to do it with a completely foreign medium.
Yes, and right. And there, and remember too, all the oh boy, the controversy of should it even be in the art world? Should we be using computers? It was a big deal,
right?
And it's taken us, I think, about 20 years to figure out how to make this work with podcasts and YouTubes and, you know, really using it to market where even shop owners didn't want to be online at first.
Yeah.
They fought it. And some fought it. They couldn't see the future of it. And now luckily just even leaving Nashville market in March, I think that was the one thing I came away from that market with is that we figured out how to use this media finally. It felt good.
Yeah. These days, if you don't embrace it, you really get left behind. Now it's and this stupid pandemic is really it's forced people to get familiar with technology, and I think I've said it before. I think one of the positive things that will come out of this pandemic, and there will be very few of them. Will be that in the needlework world, but in the work world in general, is the better grasp of what we can do with technology and meetings online and communication. We're just going to be all so much better at it.
Right.
No doubt about that. We're Zooming tomorrow for Thanksgiving. So,
yeah.
And we are. But the pandemic also good thing for the technology because without it, we would really have suffered.
Yeah.
Right.
Now talk about how back in those days, because then back then we didn't really even have we certainly didn't have social media and internet like we have today. Talk about marketing your pieces. Did you just rely on the distributor, or did you do some things on your own to get your business going?
Well, mostly distributors, but we printed catalogs with, went to market with a sheet, and it took me 3 years to get into market because there were waiting lists, and I'm not even going to go there. But so we came with a catalog, and they could purchase charts, but they could take that catalog home and see if their customers wanted to make purchases, and that was that.
I remember seeing those catalogs at cross-stitch stores. You'd go in and you'd look through them. People would say, we have the stuff for market, but here's some other stuff that they had, and you could order that way.
Right. And Wichelt, I believe, had sales reps going to different shops. And if you were signed up with them, you sent them so many free charts or something, and each salesperson had one of yours it's a long time ago, but they would go from shop to shop and peddle the wares.
So old fashioned, just so old.
I'm telling you. Now you just click a button.
Yep.
It only took 2 years to learn what that button does.
Yep. So then when did you say, all right, I'm going to have a formal business and start selling these things? Was that pretty much then, or did a period of time go by where you just toyed with it and then decided
Agreed. Yep. No, I really did not like my job. Not at all. And I liked the people I worked with. That was great, but not really the actual job. So my goal in my head was as soon as I could make as much money as I made at my job, I could quit. And that took probably 2 years. I didn't make very much money. I used the printing and I put charts together in my downtime there. And so it worked out okay. And I didn't make so much money, or I didn't love that job enough that I minded leaving. But it would have been different if I loved that job. It would have been hard to break away. And
yeah.
Right. But not liking it gave you the impetus to move forward in your design work, I would think.
I didn't look back. No. It it's factory work. It's dirty. It was gross. It was
right. Right.
It was not good.
Did your mother sell the company? Or
no,
Hank?
She ended up giving it to one of my brothers.
Oh.
Still exists. God bless you. I don't miss it one bit at all. No. No, but, you know, you look at the path that you've taken and you think, well, this got me here and this got me there and this got me to the next place. And thank you, Dad, for, you know, putting me in that spot so I could get that printing program and have a really pretty good life from it. So that's cool.
Yeah. No, you know, that's what's so fun about doing these podcasts is the different paths that people travel to get mm-hmm. to where they are. And, I mean, that you certainly have a unique one, but, it works out. So, so you get started and you got a distributor and, are you then on some kind of a mission to put out X number of charts a year, or are you just letting it flow out of your head?
Well, sort of both. My goal was a design a month.
Mm, that's healthy.
and I did for a while. In my mind, I needed to have an impact on the market. I tried to do that by putting a lot out there. There was also this fear that the internet was going to steal all your work. And it was not a blind fear. And so I thought in my head, well, I'll just keep making new things so that copying them wouldn't have the impact.
Mm.
So I don't know if it worked, but but it produced a lot of stuff.
Now, that was the days then, the early days for you was the days when there were cross-stitch stores, as many of those as gas stations in most towns.
Yes.
That gives you a really strong market. But then, you know, as those faded away, how did you adapt to that?
I think the whole market really was dumbfounded. I think there were probably 10 pretty lean years in there with shop owners as well. I mean, as some shops faded away, other shops obviously picked up their business, but it wasn't on every corner and people weren't thinking about cross stitch as much. And there were some lean times.
Yeah.
And part of it was just, we just got to hold on to this baton till we can pass it to the next generation. And I think we did.
What was it that, when did you see it start to recover from that downtime?
I would say maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
It seemed like YouTube, FlossTube and your podcast and a lot of just using the media better made that turn, I think.
Mm-hmm. So there was an extended period there where there wasn't, it was pretty slow going.
It was. There were the addicts. I'm being part of that. And I taught plenty of classes and there were plenty of people interested, but it wasn't, it just wasn't as economically feasible as it had been before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I'm sure it made a lot of people not be able to do it, to be in the industry. I mean, I didn't have kids depending on me, so it was different.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how many designers went on to something else and we'll never see them again because they're off somewhere else creating art and,
or just having a job. Yes.
Yeah. Basic right. economics. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's,
and you mentioned too, the fact that of stealing, I know there was at least one designer who basically said she was closing up shop because of that. Her designs were being so stolen. I mean, copied and whatever.
Yes. And here's my thought about it. I mean, we can all go on the website and we can pick up probably just about any design we can think of and get a copy of it. But does that really take a sale away? Not necessarily. Just because you can get a copy of it doesn't mean you're going to stitch it or you would have bought it in the first place. I don't have a good answer for it, but somehow I have to not make myself crazy either.
Yeah.
Right.
So
that is an interesting angle, though. People who would steal the stuff, would they ever have bought it in the first place? That's an interesting angle.
I've had plenty of arguments over the internet with people who found a copy of something in the trash at the library and thought they could have it. And how do you fine, take it, whatever. But you really should buy it. Or somebody who would say they have this great design, but they don't know what the picture looks like. And I said, well, you should be able to turn it over. He said, well, I'll be happy to send you the photo for $7.
There we go.
They didn't want the photo.
No.
So that's just, you can't take it too serious, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's always a few bad eggs, but, you know, hopefully the rest, you know, I found over time, most needleworkers, they want to support the business. They want to keep people designing because we have lost a few and people are sad. They're like, wait, I can't. And I'm like, well, you know.
And that was part of finding our feet with the technology too, I think. And just to find a perspective for it.
Right.
And just keep cranking out the stuff. I think I was fast enough to make them have to work really hard.
How did your design work evolve? Have you always done the style you're doing today, or have you seen it shift and change with time?
Well, I would hope it shifts and changes because people shift and change. I started out loving reproduction samplers, but just, I don't know, it wasn't my thing. So then I just took parts of it and kind of made it my own. I had years when my grandkids were small and we sang songs and I did cross stitches of songs and all kinds of things that are in your life. And I guess they just come out in an artistic way. Hopefully it's always different and changing. I
enjoyed how you reproduction samplers and then how you use those kinds of things to create original samplers. You really do a nice job of pulling elements together and making that work. And how much of that is literally borrowing motifs from reproduction samplers, and how much of that is modifying motifs to the way you want them, and how did you do that mix?
Good question. I don't know.
Excellent. Okay.
I think just playing around with it, trying this, trying that, see what works better. Some things were successful, some things weren't. I don't know. I guess that's maybe just how the personal journey goes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, you know, I mean, that, you know, some artists, it just happens to them, and others have a method and follow that method and it works for them. And so for you, it just kind of flows out of your head and works or doesn't then. Okay.
I think so. And I'm no judge on which will be successful and which won't. I have no idea.
Do you guys usually have someone who's like a sounding board that you say, hey, I've got this design, can you give me an honest reaction to it? Do you have that kind of person, or are you?
Nope.
Just flying solo. Okay.
Yep. And partly I don't want that. Not to hurt anybody's feeling, but it's my journey. And you can't design for someone else. You got to do it for you, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got a question for you. Do you keep like a sketchbook or like a notebook with ideas?
Tons of them.
Okay.
Tons of them. But I throw them away. I don't keep them. I look at them all. I always have a file, you know, ideas on my, you know, on the desktop. And some things I work on for 2 years and some things I've done in a week. You never know.
Right.
You never know.
So your ideas, just do they just come to you? Do you you know, you said you pull them from reproduction samplers too, but, and they come from songs, but you just all of a sudden, it's like you see an idea and you sketch it, or?
Sometimes I'll wake up from a dream and be like, oh man, that'd be cool. And kind of write down what it is and then look at it in the morning and go, no. but sometimes something will spark you. I mean, I did Noah's Ark, and it came from watching a documentary on woodcuts and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And something came from it. So you never know.
Okay.
Your color palette is very pleasing to the eye. And you use the words primitive and whimsical to describe your designs, but the color palette is it a mellowness to it? I'm not sure what it is, but for me, just looking at all of your designs, there's just a real nice, relaxing tone, I guess it is, to the colors. Is that, that's just you?
I think so. I like colors. I like putting colors that shouldn't go together. I work on colors a lot, laying them out and swapping them out. And I probably know every single DMC color there is. I usually play around with it until I get an emotion.
Okay.
And then I'll think, now it's speaking because I've had an emotion. So, but everyone's got their way. I don't know. Hmm. It's just part of the hardest part about designing is there's a 5 million zillion choices. How do you narrow it down to 5?
Yeah.
Or 2 or there. So it can be overwhelming, and you think doing it longer would be easier, but I don't think it is. I think it's even harder.
You always stretching the envelope? Do you find yourself trying to?
Yeah. I just did a piece releasing now, Nutcrackers 3, and it's kind of bright and it's kind of bold and it's graphic. And it's like, huh, where'd that come from? So how do you know?
Yeah, well, that's what works. Oh, where does the name La Di Da come from? What?
Let's see. That was back with Chris saying that I needed to have a logo and a name and get my act together here. And I had no idea what direction to go to. I didn't know enough about the industry, which was probably good. And so I sat down with a piece of paper and wrote out every word I could think of that was interesting. And I had a good couple pages worth. And La-Di-Da came up, and it was really a nice visual set of letters. Mm. And I thought, well, that's that.
And off you go. Okay.
Yeah.
talk about your animal designs. I really like what you do with animals.
Ooh, do I do animals? I suppose.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, I love animals. I have lots of rescue dogs, or had lots of rescue dogs. Luckily, my little dachshund is sleeping downstairs because she's really irritating most of the time. I don't know. I suppose that's just a drawing degree will help you draw animals, I guess.
Well, okay, but what about those rabbits? I was looking at those.
Oh, the rabbits.
I think those are just – but I'm interested. It's like, okay, interested in construction of things. So I'm thinking those would be just so cute at Easter to have out, or at the springtime to have stitched up and out. And so where'd you come up with that idea?
I don't know. I like animals, but not necessarily as the cutesy little animals. And mm-hmm. so I guess I tried to do them. I tried to make them more realistic, and then they just kind of get stylized in their own course of time. But
right, I don't really like cutesy. That cutesy, it's not kind of what I like, but I looked at those and I thought, I like those. Those are really nice looking. I don't know. I just, there's something about the way the ears were or something, the length of them.
Yes. And I think it's because they're grown up. Yes, their grown-up version.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that all came about, but I know what I like.
Yeah. Now, do you stitch all of your own designs, or do you have people do it for you?
I stitch almost all of them. There's maybe four that I haven't. Plus all the classes, projects, and stuff like that too. So I'm a pretty maniac stitcher. And I do other people's stuff, so
Oh, you do? That's
I do
interesting. Yeah.
my walls downstairs. I have maybe a dozen or so nice good size samplers. And I used to have my stuff on the walls, but then I kept thinking, well, I don't really like this, and I don't really like this, and I should change that. And I thought, oh my gosh, you can't live like that.
So down they
So
come,
it's somebody
yeah.
else's design problem, not mine.
Now,
And that's great.
do you have a studio there at home?
I have a bedroom, yeah,
Okay.
upstairs. Yep, with way too much stuff in it, I'll tell you.
Yeah. You're not alone there. Does it
No.
stay contained there, or is it elsewhere in the house too?
It's contained.
Oh,
Ah, it is contained. Well, not really. Maybe not as much as I think. It might be a little in the attic.
okay. Well, that's
Why not?
okay. That's okay.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah. 'Cause I mean, easy to have it spread around the house as you're doing things. Yes.
You know, and I've got probably over 200 designs, so, and I have most of them. So we live in the attic. I know, my
Totally
poor
understand that.
So talk about your teaching. Were you doing live classes and now doing online, or what, where are you at with that?
I am not. All the classes kind of fell apart, which is fine. I'm coming right outside of Chicago, which is COVID central here. We've had it twice, so ugh. So it was fine that it was canceled. I did one of the projects, though, I did with Teresa, and rather than just release it for the EGA that it was supposed to be with, released it to everybody, and that was quite successful and a lot of fun. So I did a project also with Shepherd's Needle, some strawberries, which I had never done those before. So rather than just have it be a small class, we released it as a chart or a kit to anyone. All I could tell you is go on YouTube and learn how to do it, because that's what I did.
What's that? What's that
Yes.
like to collaborate with other designers? Is that do you just got to find the right person so you can work together?
That was a shop, not a designer. Those were shops, not
Okay.
designers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Teresa. Yep, but that was as a shop. Yeah.
Oh, you mean Shakespeare's Peddler or
Correct.
Teresa Kitten Stitcher? Okay, Kitten Stitcher then. Okay.
The same
She's the
gal,
same person. She's the same gal, but
yeah,
her shop.
but
All
we
right.
didn't collaborate on the design. It was just she was actually looking for people who wanted to maybe put out some kits. And I thought, well, I just canceled this project and checked with the EGA and said, yeah, let's do that. So that worked out really, really well for a lot of people.
No.
So,
Yeah.
I guess I got to ask you. So, are you just not interested in doing a Zoom class, or you just haven't explored that?
I think, I don't know if I know. I've been doing plenty of other projects, and maybe it just hasn't lent itself. I think that things got canceled too late to really make that the plan, because we still had to get kits together and shipping, and it just the logistics never seemed to have worked out.
Right.
So I think we're hoping next year. I think I'm still teaching the same classes I was supposed to teach this last year, and we're just going to try it in 2021.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully that'll be good. I think so.
Yeah.
And now we're going into it with the attitude of if this is a bust, we'll do a Zoom backup. And just knowing that right from the start, go ahead and get supplies and get kits ready and some follow through with it, because if the class is going to be canceled, you don't want to put all your money into kits that are going to sit in your room.
Right.
So it was just a crazy, crazy year.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, and that you talk about getting materials to put kits together is,
yes.
I think it's, I don't know if it's gotten worse, but it sure doesn't seem to be getting any better.
Well, you know, there's good and bad in that, because it's a lot of people out there stitching.
Yes.
So that's good. Getting supplies, well, that's kind of hard. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this pandemic has been a huge shot in the arm for this hobby. There's no question about that. People are stitching everywhere and stitching a lot of it. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. And that's wonderful. And that was actually leaving Nashville in March. That trend had happened already.
Yeah.
So it was on its way, and this just put it into kind of overdrive. And thank goodness that shops were able to stay open through it. I think the majority have and switched to online sales and had a little in-store stuff, but I don't know. I think that kind of comes with the waves, open, closed. But yeah. But it's kept this industry alive. Thank you, Internet.
Sure has, yep. I'll be curious. It'd be a fun survey to do after these pandemic subsides and we find some kind of a normal life again. It'd be interesting to do a survey for how many people actually reduced the number of projects they have in their stash during the time.
Or... No one's going to answer that question.
No, that's a terrible question, Gary.
I think I know the answer, and that it would be zero.
I think we all probably did a lot of online shopping.
Yeah. Yeah.
All kinds of things we didn't think we needed before.
Right.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
No, I have no delusions that people actually stitched what's in their stash. No, I'm pretty sure of it. Did you reduce your stash? No.
No.
Did you increase your stash? You bet I did.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah, we're lucky that we hung through this. I think we're going to make it through the other end. Nashville in March May will be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Coming from Wisconsin, I'm excited because we usually have a snowstorm to go through. So I'm good.
Yeah. May for us. Well, Beth and I are both in Northern Illinois, so we're not too far from you.
Right.
Gotcha.
That weather should be better. No question about
mm-hmm.
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's, of course, I mean, I hope that by then we're able to have it. You know, we just got the one in March last year, just in time.
Yep.
That was a huge break.
Yeah.
Two weeks later, probably would have had to think twice. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. We probably, in hindsight, probably shouldn't have been there.
No, probably not.
No, but we didn't know. And we actually got in an accident, a bad accident on our way home.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah, totaled my car. Oof, that was terrible. Ugh. Ended up there an extra day right outside of Nashville. We didn't get very far. But made it home safe and sound. But it was sort of like ever since that moment, you go, I think we entered Bizarro World.
Yeah. We certainly have. Yep. Yeah, because I remember it at Nashville, are we shaking hands? Are we hugging? Are we, those questions were starting to come up. And now you don't even ask the question. It's just, don't touch.
No.
6 feet. But I do remember going with some really powerful disinfectant, and I cleaned the whole hotel room, like top to bottom. I don't know if it did any good, but but I think we were just ahead of really the explosion of it.
Right. Yeah. Just got it in. Just got it in. So hopefully in May it'll be just afterwards.
I'm hoping to, and I think that it's nice to know ahead of time. You know, the hard thing for me about the whole pandemic was not knowing 1 week from the next. Are we doing this? Are we not? Is this? Is that? I don't know. You know.
Right.
Right.
So, I think we will make May work.
Yeah, it got a lot easier when people just said, all right, forget it. Let's just shut everything down, shut down all these events and be done with it instead of trying to guess whether we can or not. And then, because you can't be in limbo all the time.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was difficult.
Yeah. When it comes to Nashville, which I assume is by far your biggest show, do you target a number of designs? Do you hold designs? How do you approach that in terms of the flow of material you produce all year?
I usually hold some stuff. I'll usually have a fall release, sometimes a Christmas release, and then nothing till Nashville.
Okay.
So, and I might have stuff like in the drawing board in the works, but I don't usually release anything. I have in the past, and nothing, everyone's holding onto their cash for the show. So.
Oh, I see. So it really doesn't do you any good.
No, it hasn't that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. No, so you might as well just hold on to it.
And do you have, as you go through the year, do you have, say, a design comes to your head and you put it down? Do you say, wait a minute, I'm hanging on to this one. This is going to be a good one for Nashville? Or...
I used to, and then I was usually wrong.
Okay.
I don't do that anymore. Matter of fact, the one design that I thought, I think I'm not going to bring this one with to Nashville was my bestseller, so I know nothing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I give up.
I don't think you're alone there. I think most designers would say the same thing. It's just hard to predict.
It is, right. And it feels, you just have to have the confidence. Just throw it out there. It used to be where you were paying thousands of dollars to have stuff printed. You had to have 2,000 printed in order to get a good price and that whole world going on. Yeah. And now you just print as you go. So you're not going to lose that much money, even if it's a fail.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps take the edge off a little bit too.
Yeah. So compared to the printer you started with, a powerful, pretty powerful one in the house there to print with.
You know, I just have a $300 printer. It's a color laser jet or laser printer, and it's like my third one. They last me about a year.
I was going to say, I bet you burned through them pretty good, yeah.
I burned through them pretty good,
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. The office store knows me well.
Yeah. Well, Lori, this sure has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great. I was really nervous to sit down and chat, and you made it nice and easy. So thank you.
Well, that's good. Yep. All right. So la-di-da at, what is it? La-di-da.net.
.net. Yep.
With hyphens in life, hyphens between the la, the d, and the da.
Don't go there with me. That might have been a mistake.
Yeah.
But it's quite graphic.
Right. So there we are, la-di-da.net to see all of them, and hit up Sassy Jack's or your local needlework store for the designs. And Lori, thank you. Appreciate the time.